From Wisconsin Public Radio, it's Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in La Crosse talking about infrastructure and the federal infrastructure funding bill that's been signed into law. Previously today, we heard from Congressman Ron Kind, and if you missed that conversation, you can find it on our website, which is wpr.org/newsmakers. And now I am joined by two additional guests. Steve O'Malley is the La Crosse County Administrator. Steve, thanks a lot for coming back on Newsmakers.
Happy to do so. Thanks for inviting me.
And we've got Professor Manny Teodoro, who's the Associate Professor of Public Affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Manny, thanks a lot for being here.
Great to be with you, Ezra.
I want to talk about this funding. We've been talking to Congressman Kind about a lot of this funding, and now on a more local level, Steve, as you're looking at the county budget in La Crosse County, which is one of several counties in our listening area, but certainly the most populous county in our listening area. What are your priorities as a county, and what are you really hoping to see as a result of this infrastructure funding?
Well, certainly it's a rather complicated package. Everything from roads to green infrastructure to broadband, electric grid, wastewater and water treatment. All of those kinds of issues, airports, transit. So it includes a lot of things, and many of the details are yet to be clear for Wisconsin. But particularly in La Crosse, we'd be most interested in assistance with our road funding, stormwater improvements and erosion control, wastewater, certainly anything that can help with our water pollution problems on French Island here in La Crosse with the forever chemicals called PFAS. So very excited that this could end up addressing some really major problems for our community.
Congressman Kind actually talked about that very issue for quite a bit of time, and he said that there should be ample funding available once various local authorities and the people that need to cooperate on that kind of solution get a plan together take care of that PFAS issue. How reasonable an expectation do you think that is? Do you think the powers that be can come to a consensus on exactly how that problem needs to be dealt with?
Well, I think so. We've talked to the town of Campbell, and the county will be providing some money for them to do an initial feasibility study of what their options are. We've also worked with the city of La Crosse and town of Campbell on a joint grant that we didn't get for that area that would address some of the infrastructure, the road needs. The airport is there, the harbor is there, but also talking about Senator Baldwin had just announced that $142 million will be coming to the state of Wisconsin for addressing water quality issues, specifically addressing the PFAS issue. So that combined with some of this funding, I'm confident that local officials can come together and agree upon a plan if there's significant dollars allocated from the infrastructure plan.
That's Steve O'Malley. He's a county administrator for La Crosse County. Dr. Manny Teodoro is with us, who's associate professor of public affairs at UW-Madison. Manny, I know a lot of your research involves issues of water quality, and I know you've been looking closely at how this funding intersects with those issues. What have you found out so far?
Yeah, there's a lot of things going on with water and wastewater in this infrastructure law. You know, on PFAS in particular, La Crosse is really ground zero for the challenge of PFAS in drinking water. And so it's encouraging to see that national attention to what really is a national issue, but very much in focus in La Crosse, Wisconsin. You know, in addition to the money directed to Wisconsin on PFAS, this bill also devotes some significant funding to research to help us figure out how to remediate and address these chemicals, which are a real challenge for drinking water because they don't degrade over time. So, it's encouraging that the federal government's taking serious action on PFAS at this point, and it sort of points the way to rulemaking under the Safe Drinking Water Act on PFAS. More generally, the top line number that we're seeing in this bill is $55 billion. For drinking water across the United States. And that's been heralded as the largest ever federal investment in drinking water infrastructure. Over time, assuming everything's ultimately appropriated, Wisconsin could get as much as $800 million for drinking water. Again, in sheer dollars, that would be the biggest federal investment ever in drinking water in this state and across the country. But to give you some perspective, you know, a lot of that $55 billion is in the form of loans, not necessarily grants. So the federal largesse isn't quite as big as all that. And if you look at the total needs, we're looking at something like $1 trillion in drinking water infrastructure needs over the next 20 years across the country, and probably something like $8 or $9 billion in Wisconsin. So while this money is definitely going to be helpful, we shouldn't be under the impression that Uncle Sam is taking care of all of our water infrastructure needs for the next generation.
I think this doesn't have anything to do with Western Wisconsin, but I think of, when you talk about drinking water, everybody thinks about Flint, Michigan and everything that they've been through. I mean, hundreds upon hundreds of millions of dollars, maybe even billions of dollars that it would take to fix the issues that a city like that is facing. The federal dollars that are going to be directed toward this, are they going to be weighted toward communities like that need so much more? Or is it going to be just kind of divided up on basically a population basis? You're a state of this size, so you get this chunk of the pie.
Sure. That's one of the features of this law. It does call for a new weighting of funding to address infrastructure needs in communities that historically have suffered from either discrimination, maybe have not received sufficient funding in the past, places that have very impoverished populations, perhaps racial and ethnic minority communities. We're not really sure yet exactly how EPA is going to develop those formulae, so we'll have to wait and see how that all shakes out. The other part that's really important here is that there are some significant funds set aside for tribal communities, which is an important issue here in Wisconsin. You know, historically, the tribes did not receive significant funding, especially in the 1970s when the first water and sewer kind of laws and infrastructure funding came out. The tribes weren't part of those programs. This law sets out some funding specifically for tribes, and that's going to be very important in a lot of those communities.
We're talking about funding of these problems. Steve O'Malley from La Crosse County, when you're looking at these big, huge numbers that are going to be doled out federally, or even talking about, like, for example, $5.2 billion coming to Wisconsin for highways, $225 million coming to Wisconsin for bridges, and on down the line, how do you look at big, huge categories of numbers like that and try to figure out how much of that might be coming to your county?
Well, at this point, we're not over planning because it'll get clearer as it goes along. But what I've been able to discover so far is that it's likely to increase the formula funding to our general transportation aids on roads in the neighborhood of 25%, so I can quantify that. It's going to increase the volume of funding for the competitive grants that we're always used to going to. So for example, we went for a $16 million grant for French Island, County Campbell, for our airport and harbors and a number of other issues over there. We didn't receive that, but with this new funding, we're likely to recompete and use the same design and go after that addresses everything from water to roads, the airport, harbors, multimodal transportation. So I'm not too worried about getting into the details of how much, because that's going to become clear within the next first or second quarter of next year, we're expecting. Because remember, this bill has been passed and signed. It has not been appropriated yet. That's a separate part of the federal act that still has to happen. And when that appropriation bill is actually approved in the first or second quarter of next year, I think it's going to become a lot clearer what's available for which purpose and which localities.
So they basically...
Ezra, I jump in on something? Steve raised something that's really important that I think we need to recognize for this entire bill, but also especially for water. And that is, much of this funding is going to be competitive. So it gets allocated to state agencies. State agencies then turn around and allocate to local communities depending on their needs. That process is generally competitive in the sense that local communities need to apply for and often compete with other communities for a limited set of funds. Places like La Crosse County, the cities of La Crosse, and maybe places like Eau Claire have the staff capacity and the sophistication to handle those processes. The new law would describe those communities as medium-sized, at least on the drinking water systems. But those application and competitive processes can be a serious challenge for the very small communities. Something to keep in mind in Wisconsin, almost two-thirds of the water utilities in this state serve fewer than 1,000 customers. And they might only have two or three employees, maybe a dozen employees for an entire small municipality. They don't necessarily have the staff or sophistication to compete for that kind of funding. That's the bad news. The good news is Congress does seem to have recognized those limitations to some degree. And so it's encouraging that the new infrastructure law includes some provisions that allocate funds specifically for smaller or medium-sized communities so that they're not just up against Milwaukee and Madison and trying to fight with for limited pools of money with a lot much larger, more sophisticated organizations.
Well, and the professor's right on that. However, I know that DOT is talking about, for example, the amount that's coming for bridges, that they may be inclined to have most of that go to localities instead of competitive grants. So there is there's an ongoing funding stream for bridges, for example, that DOT tends to take care really well of the bridges they're responsible for, while us as small municipalities, counties, villages, towns don't have that much taxing ability to be able to do that. So they're hoping to actually emphasize more direct funding through that program.
So, Steve, when you're looking at incoming funding for this, are you generating new project ideas or reevaluating things that have maybe been placed on the back burner that nevertheless need to be done? Or do you already have a very long list of projects and additional funding will simply accelerate the rate at which you're able to get to them?
The latter. We have over $76 million of unfunded needs that in the next 5 years we can't even touch, identified based on our road quality ratings. With the large stormwater events that we've been having and experiencing all over the state, taking out road systems through erosion, large systems that because we have very steep terrain here, we've got a long list. Not everything's designed, not everything's shovel ready, but if we can accelerate that over the next 5 years, when we have identified funding, we're going to be ready to go. We're prepared to do the best we can to put this money to use.
Manny, I'm thinking about drinking water quality and you were talking about just small towns having water infrastructure issues and that need to be dealt with. But we hear a lot also about like these major polluters. I mean, we talked about PFAS earlier and often associated with areas around airports. But also in Wisconsin, in western Wisconsin, we have these massive agricultural feeding operations that have just lots of pollution issues and other kinds of agricultural runoff and those kinds of things that can affect drinking water. How big are those concerns? And is there funding available to address things like that?
Well, of course, those are large and perennial concerns. One of the things that this bill does not do is really do much in the way of addressing systemic needs. And by that, I mean, there are not significant regulatory reforms built into at least the water portions of this bill. It really is largely a funding package. So there are a few provisions in here and some that will be particularly useful. There are some calls for studies of affordability, sustainability, the emerging contaminants like PFAS, nitrate and phosphorus, and the other kinds of challenges we see here in the upper Midwest. But there's nothing in here that's changing the regulations. There are no amendments to the Clean Water Act, for example, under this law. So that's a long way of saying no. There's not much to address those kinds of concerns. However, there is call for investment in research on new methods and techniques for addressing contamination.
So you talked about this mostly being a funding mechanism. And not much in the way of changing policy in that regard. So to that extent, do you think that a bill like this does enough, or is a bill like this can only do so much, and you really need to deal with the policy stuff through another avenue?
Yeah, that's right. There's really not a systemic reform. You know, the water sector remains highly fragmented. Wisconsin has something like 11,000 little community water systems, and 500 or 600 utilities that operate separately. That this bill doesn't do anything to change that structure. Doesn't do anything to change the way that we organize water and sewer service provision in the United States. That's not really what it set out to do. And as I indicated earlier, the funding here is very important, but is a small fraction of the projected long-term needs, both in Wisconsin and across the country.
Steve, as you're looking at the projects that La Crosse County has on, what's something that you're particularly maybe excited is the wrong word, but you know how it is. Is there something that you're excited to be able to address?
Well, certainly, as I've talked about, the French Island issues that are both transportation related and related to water, that excites me. Our community over there, the town of Campbell, is having to use all bottled water. They can't use the wells that they have. So some type of solution that would address that, while also giving us a chance to redo the road system that comes from La Crosse across that bridge of the Black River into our community that actually serves the airport, which is in the city of La Crosse, but on French Island. They share that with the town of Campbell. Very excited if we were able to get what was not funded by the grant that we were turned down on. We've got that all designed. It's ready to go. So if we could be able to access that along with matching local funds, so we're not just relying on the federal government, that would be very exciting for our community.
I think that would be exciting for the whole country, Ezra. I think all eyes are on French Island in that sense. We want to see how to make a PFAS remediation work.
In terms of PFAS remediation, is this you've talked about the effort that's being made to understand it better and using French Island as a bit of a test case. Is it fair to say that issue there on French Island really could sort of be a game changer if they can find a way to deal with it that could be applied elsewhere in the country?
Well, I don't think we're going to solve the problem of PFAS. I think we're going to go around it and find a way to serve it from other wells. This is not going to repair the problem. The wells that are there are contaminated. And I don't know, maybe the professor has some idea. I've heard of bacteria and other things that people are sampling to try to figure out. But I think it's solving the issue by connecting to a municipal water system and replacing wells. And that's hugely expensive. But I'm not smart enough to know the chemical side. The scientist on the phone can probably tell us that's going to be way too long to solve the PFAS problem. They're forever chemicals, and the three of us aren't.
Manny, what about
That's right. I want to be careful. I'm a social scientist, not a chemical engineer. However, there are a lot of really smart chemical engineers working on how to address the PFAS contamination issue. But that's absolutely right. Like, the short term and an immediate need is to get the people in these communities protected. Right. And if that means connecting to new wells in the short term, dealing with maybe site-specific treatment technology. There's the technology is just rapidly evolving in this area. But, you know, French Island is a place that happens to be suffering from an especially severe PFAS contamination. And so in that sense, it's going to be a model for what happens elsewhere.
Well, this has been an incredibly interesting conversation. And I know a lot of our part of the conversation dealt with some of the water issues, but elsewhere in the show, we've also talked about a lot of the other funding from broadband to the expansion of electric charging stations to highway construction and everything else. You can find all of that on our website, which is wpr.org/newsmakers. I want to thank my guests today, Dr. Manny Teodoro, Associate Professor of Public Affairs at UW-Madison. Manny, thanks a lot for joining us on Newsmakers.
My pleasure, Ezra. Thank you.
And Steve O'Malley is the La Crosse County Administrator. Steve, thank you again for being here.
Certainly. Happy to do it. Thanks for shedding a light on this really important investment for our world.
And if you missed any of our program today, you can hear the whole thing, and you can find all of our previous episodes online in your favorite podcatcher or on our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our program airs each week a couple of times. We originate 10 a.m. on Fridays on the Ideas Network 90.3. We then repeat Friday evening at 7 on NPR News and Music 88.9. For my producer, Dawn Jewell, and for John Davis, who helps us out a lot, I thank you very much for listening. I'm Ezra Wall. Join us again next week for another Newsmakers right here on Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall. We're talking about the infrastructure bill and the funding that it provides to Wisconsin. And our guest is Representative Ron Kind, Wisconsin 3rd District Congressional Representative. Congressman Kind, we've been talking about water quality a lot. There are some other aspects of this bill that we have yet to talk about. But one thing that I wanted to ask you is, in all the back and forth about what is going to be included and what's not going to be included, is there something that you couldn't quite get in the bill or that had to be laid aside for the moment that you were disappointed to see go?
You know, I was a little disappointed we pulled up short when it came to climate change infrastructure investments. There are ways of building these things in a more sustainable, climate-friendly way. Unfortunately, many of my Republican colleagues are pushing back on that. But in light of the science of climate change, I think the verdict is in. We no longer have the luxury of just twiddling our thumbs and pretending it's not real and it's not going to get worse. And there's a major role for infrastructure to play as far as sustainability of these projects to reduce global emissions and help combat climate change. I am happy, however, that we were able to get significant investment in the build out of these EV charging stations. I mean, clearly the auto and truck industry is moving into the direction of electric vehicles and hybrid vehicles, but it will go for naught unless you have these charging stations easy and readily available. So we're gonna be doubling down and making a major investment in the build out of that. I mean, QuickTrip is a classic example of already starting that private investment in EV charging. And I give them a lot of credit for peering into the future and seeing what the transportation needs are going to be. But it's going to have to go to a much larger scale than that if this is going to work for the average person.
I could see a lot of the same thing you talked about with rural broadband. You could see in terms of electric vehicles about it being more profitable to have those charging stations in larger population centers. But needing a little bit of incentive for people to make those available as you get farther out into our rural communities.
Yeah, you're exactly right. You know, where private companies can do it in a highly condensed fashion, getting multiple customers in a small radius, there's money to be made there, but perhaps less in rural America, where you're going to have fewer customers needing these EV charging. They won't be able to pay as much for these private companies. And so I think that's where the partnership is going to have to come in and make sure it's feasible, because even people living in urban and suburban areas are going to travel outside that area, and they sure are going to appreciate the convenience of EV stations along their route in rural America. So this is going to benefit everyone, not just rural residents or farmers or rural businesses.
The spending in this bill is doled out over a period of years, and you mentioned that the offsets that are quote unquote paying for it are over a 10-year period of time. Most of the spending's over, I think, a 5-year period of time. How soon will people be able to see like actual tangible results from this spending in their communities, and what might that look like?
You know, it can happen pretty quickly when it comes to our roads, highways, bridges. The Wisconsin Department of Transportation has got a formula already. They've got a list of high need projects, shovel ready projects that are ready to go right now. Working with the local county highway department, local municipalities, they too see where the greatest need is. I mean, take a look at La Crosse Street, for instance. I think everyone recognizes that's long overdue. And we're going to be able to push these projects forward then. Start these investments relatively soon. So now that the bill's passed and signed into law, I mean, the funding formulas are there and money is starting to be distributed back to the states already. Question becomes whether the road builders, the engineers, union members too, are gonna have enough workers in order to accomplish all these tasks. So this too will be in competition with what already is a tight labor market. And it's one of the great challenges we face as a nation is where are all the workers to fill these jobs that are going to be created? It's the number one concern I hear from businesses large and small back home. We're struggling to hire up right now. And unfortunately, demographics in our country are working against us. 70 million baby boomers beginning their massive retirement, leaving the workforce. We have a declining birth rate. We have a messed up immigration system. And in too many instances, just participating in work is proving to be a big challenge for people without affordable quality childcare, so that we are assured that our kids are safe and being taken care of if we're participating in the workforce. The need for paid family medical leave, so that if a child gets sick or an elder gets sick, you can take care of that family responsibility without fear of losing your job or having to leave the workforce. So in many ways, the next bill that we're working on right now, the Build Back Better plan, is about making work easier for people so they can fill these jobs, continue to grow the economy, given the barriers that exist for workforce entry right now for so many people.
We'll certainly be calling on your office to talk about that effort as it progresses as well. But I have a procedural question about the infrastructure bill, and it has to do with you're obviously a lot of people knocking on your door as a congressman. We need this, we need this, we want this. And a lot of items to keep track of. When you start working on a bill like this infrastructure bill, huge, huge bill with long and lasting consequences and a big price tag, do you start assembling a list and add up kind of how much money your district needs for this and this and this and then go fight for it? Or do you just go to the table and fight for as much as you can and figure out how it's going to be divided after the fact?
Well, you know, for me, and I know this is true for the federal agencies, for many of my colleagues, it starts from listening to people back home, you know, from our highway departments, our local governments that see the need, the State Department of Transportation that already has these lists and the formulas already assembled back home. So they can put those calculations together fairly quickly. And then on the broadband front, too, and that's where having good, accurate maps are so important. So we know where the gaps are that need to be closed. And we're still working on that. But we also know from the feedback we've gotten from communities back home that there are huge shortfalls that need to be addressed. So as far as the National Broadband Task Force that I was working on, we were listening to segments throughout the country as far as where the gaps were, what the need was, and then putting those cost estimates together. But also with in the back of your mind was, how are we going to pay for this too? That if you become too large, too extravagant, those offsets are going to be very difficult to find in the budget to pay for it at the end of the day. So you got to strike that balance of just where you can cut, where you can perhaps raise some revenue in order to meet the immediate need, but without leaving a shortfall that would only add to budget deficits.
That practicality piece reminded me of a question I wanted to ask you regarding the $500+ million in Wisconsin dedicated to public transit. In bigger cities, Madison, Milwaukee, it obviously makes a lot of sense to have very robust public transit systems. Even in sort of a mid-sized city like La Crosse, if I can call it a mid-sized city, we have a public transit system, and then we have, you know, different aspects of transit that might run between one city and another. But at a certain point, like, you need a certain critical mass to make a public transit investment worthwhile, because otherwise you just have buses running around and around and around town with no riders. How does that public that effort to promote and enhance the availability of public transit look in a district like yours that doesn't have huge, huge cities in it?
Yeah, you know, it's important that we do need a robust public transportation system in cities large and small. I mean, this can help us combat climate change with fewer cars, trucks on the road, emitting. It's the greatest emission of CO2 that we have in our country today, still vehicles. A lot of people I've heard from would like a more convenient public transit system to take advantage of, who may choose not to have to buy a car, insurance, all the expenses that go along with it, you know, where you're going to park it, store it. So in the bill, too, there are formulas now to help build out bike lanes to make that a more viable option. Incentives for e-bicycles, electric bicycles, make it easier for people to use that to get to work or wherever they may be going. Walking lanes too, trying to encourage more inner city walking that would be safe and efficient for people. So we're trying to think creatively in what A, the people want, and B, what makes sense as far as the future needs are, and also how this is going to help us combat climate change in the years to come.
Is there anything in the bill that you that you were disappointed to see included, or anything in there that you disagree with?
Well, you know, it's a product of compromise, and that's how democracy is supposed to work. No one's going to get everything they want, but hopefully there's enough there where people can find consensus and the need to move forward on it. I think that too was lacking in recent years. And guys, this is what democracy is supposed to look like. Making this stuff is often tiresome, frustratingly slow, ugly in the trade-offs and compromises that are being that are made. But unless you're satisfied with the dictatorship where one guy makes all the calls, this is what democracy looks like too. It's a product of hard-fought negotiations. But at the end of the day, to make it work, you got to find common ground. And that's been kind of my DNA ever since I've been in Congress, reaching across the aisle, trying to form collaborations with Republican colleagues to get things done. And this bill certainly reflects that.
You talked about the collaboration and you talked about the compromise that it takes to really be effective in Washington. And yet, by the numbers, like 13 of your House colleagues ultimately voted for this bill, I think, and 19 Republican senators, which is a larger percentage in the Senate than in the House. But certainly interesting to see some cooperation across the aisle. But when most people think of something being truly bipartisan, maybe they're hoping for more margins than that.
I was first of all delighted we had 70 senators agree on anything. That's almost a miracle including Mitch McConnell, the minority leader in the Senate, voted for it. And I was extremely disappointed that only 13 of my Republican colleagues in the House voted for it. No one from the Wisconsin delegation, even though they were hearing the same thing I was back home here about the desperate need for it. And it became a political calculation for them.
Setting politics aside for a second, they're just around town, I hear a lot of people talk about just the expense of something like this. And you know, we in our, you know, sort of mostly middle class town, it's hard to wrap your mind around how many billions of dollars this is. And that just sounds like a ton of money. How do you talk to people who just have trouble, you know, embracing an idea of something that's just so expensive?
You know, I could see the point of view if it wasn't paid for, but this is through hard negotiations, offsets in the budget, completely paid for, so it doesn't add to the budget deficit. So we are paying for it, even though it is a relatively large package. But I would submit that the cost of not doing this is even greater.
Congressman Ron Kind represents Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District, and we've been speaking to him about the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, which has recently been signed into law, and we'll have a whole lot of infrastructure funding coming to projects throughout western Wisconsin. Congressman Kind, thanks again for joining us on Newsmakers today.
Yeah, thanks, Ezra. My pleasure. Take care.
And our conversation on infrastructure will continue in just a moment, but first, we've got time for a little listener feedback. We aired a show recently about adult enrichment, and as part of that, we talked to a couple of folks from facilities that help out people with memory issues, residential and otherwise. And so Matt heard that segment and emailed us about his experience. He said, "My mom has been in memory care for about 6 years in Viroqua." And I'm editing some of the personal details out of Matt's email here. He says, "I've been playing acoustic music every Monday from 12:30 until 2 most of those years. They had to stop for a while during COVID." Matt continues, "The magic that occurs as we play many old songs, from folk songs to fiddle tunes and old jazz standards, popular songs from the 1930s through the Beatles and classic rock. We try to hit good sing-along songs." That sounds like fun. "It really wakes everyone up and gets everyone singing. Amazing that people who can't remember their children can remember song lyrics and melodies. My mom, says Matt, doesn't really know anyone anymore, but she can sing all the words to I'll Fly Away and I'll Be Working on the Railroad, etc. We have six regular players who rotate in and out of the group. It's so fun and mysterious to be part of that. Thanks, Matt, for the email. I can relate to that, as my grandmother was declining with Alzheimer's disease long after she ceased to remember who I was on any given day. She would walk around the house or be sitting in a chair singing a song, and music. It's so important to people, and it's often the last thing to go, and even to the end, just brings such joy to people's lives. So thanks, Matt, for sharing that story. If you would like to chime in on a show that you heard here on Newsmakers, or if you have a question or an idea or something that you would like us to explore in the future, I would love to hear from you. You can email us, newsmakers@wpr.org. newsmakers@wpr.org. And if you're looking for some fodder for those emails, you can find all of our previous episodes. A lot of them are available in your favorite podcatcher, or if you just go to our website, wpr.org/newsmakers, you'll be able to find all the episodes there. That's wpr.org/newsmakers. Our program continues. Our infrastructure conversation continues in just a moment. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, it's Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in La Crosse, and we're talking today about the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, which has recently been signed into law by President Joe Biden and has wide-ranging infrastructure implications across the entire country, including here in western Wisconsin. And we are talking about that today on Newsmakers. I'm joined right now by 3rd District Wisconsin Congressman Ron Kind. Representative Kind, thank you very much for joining us on Newsmakers today.
Ezra, my pleasure as always. Look forward to the conversation.
And we're talking about this infrastructure bill, and no small amount of debate between parties as to what should be included or not. But when it's all said and done, it looks like we've got just a lot of money, billions of dollars headed here to Wisconsin for everything from highway improvements and repairs to some airport funding, broadband expansion, and all kinds of things. What are the key areas of funding here that Wisconsinites, particularly Western Wisconsinites, need to look out for?
Well, first of all, Ezra, I am so happy that we were able to get this bipartisan infrastructure bill across the finish line. The previous 4 years, it was like infrastructure week every week in Washington, and nothing came of it. It never got done. And part of that was a lack of President Trump's leadership. He would not engage with Congress on how to do this and do it well. But I also give credit to President Biden. He was tenacious. He had a lot of bipartisan meetings on the Hill and also at the White House, listening to members and getting their feedback and allowing them to take ownership of this. And let me say, at the top, this bill was paid for. No deficit spending, no borrowing against our children's future. We took time to find offsets in order to pay for this over a 10-year period. So it's very fiscally responsible, while rebuilding Wisconsin, rebuilding America the way it should be, coming out of this global pandemic. I can't think of a better time to rebuild Wisconsin and the good paying jobs that will flow from it. So I'm looking forward in the coming months to see this money hit the ground quite literally in Wisconsin, from roads, highways, bridges, airports that we have, infrastructure along our inland waterways, to a major expansion in broadband funding, including that last mile, difficult areas in rural Wisconsin, clean drinking water investment throughout the state, which is crucial right now, EV charging stations, everything to get us ready for the modern economy, so we're in a better position to compete globally. So this is exciting. I'm glad it got done, and I think Wisconsin's going to see some great benefits from it all.
You mentioned a lot of categories here. Is there something that you're particularly excited to see some funding for coming to Wisconsin, to the 3rd District?
Yeah, our infrastructure hardware was, of course, desperately needed and upgraded. Our roads, our highways, our bridges. Close to half our rural bridges in Wisconsin were rated as deficient. The National Electrical Engineers Association graded us a C as a state overall when it came to our infrastructure. But one area I worked particularly hard at, Israel, and I served on a nonpartisan National Broadband Commission. There's a lot of the work that we put in over the last couple of years on broadband expansion, closing the digital divide, got included in this bill. And I represent, you know, a fairly large rural Western Wisconsin district. And I know these rural communities. I know the rural residents. They've been shut off for too long as far as the information superhighway, having high-speed internet connection in their businesses or in their homes. And we saw this manifest itself during the pandemic, from the digital divide that affected kids and distance learning to telehealth and the need for continued healthcare services. So all this is important for the modern economy and making sure that we don't leave anyone behind.
When you were talking about the broadband funding that's here, and especially how it's going to affect rural areas, you use the term the last mile. For people who are not quite familiar with that issue, talk about why that last mile is so important.
You know, I think what people understand is back in the 1930s, we had a major national rural electrification program. And that was to make sure that all our farmers, all our rural communities and rural residences had access to electricity. So that infrastructure had to be built up literally to their doorstep. Private companies weren't going to do this on their own. The return on investment's not there for that long distance to lay all that hardware and that infrastructure to get everyone connected. So it required a really strong federal and private partnership to close these last miles, to make sure that that infrastructure build out went to people's doorstep. And the same is going to be needed with broadband expansion now too, because again, the private industry, they don't see the rate of return on it. They don't think they need to invest in these last miles. That now is going to be a prerequisite to them qualifying for this federal grant money, is to make sure that they do have a plan put in place so they're not leaving anyone behind. Even though it's more profitable for them to be offering high-speed internet connection in densely populated urban and suburban areas where a lot of people are close together, yeah, it's easy to lay that infrastructure and be able to make money off from that. But when you get out in the rural countryside, when homes and farms can be a mile apart, that return on investment isn't as apparent. So that was always a major challenge as far as broadband expansion and closing those gaps. And this bill now, I think, goes a long ways to address it.
One of the things that you mentioned was the C grade that that Wisconsin's infrastructure has been given by the national organization that runs the report card for American infrastructure. Toward that end, this bill provides, if the information that I've read about it is accurate, about just less than $5.5 billion, about $5.2 billion in funding for highways in Wisconsin. But in terms of the need, like, how far is that $5.2 billion going to go? It sounds like an awful lot of money to a guy like me, but like when you start actually paying for paving projects, that gets really expensive.
Yeah, you know, $5.2 billion is not chump change, as they say. And yeah, it should go a long ways in Wisconsin. And we've done a pretty good job as a state, always coming together, trying to figure out a way of maintaining basic maintenance. But that's been catching up with us in recent years. And listen, Madison has been tied up in knots just as bad as Washington has when it came to infrastructure investment. In fact, Madison still hasn't passed anything comprehensive yet. And I think the problem with them is the same problem we wrestled with. How do you pay for it, you know, without bonding, without going into debt to do all this? And so they've been stalemated in the legislature in Madison. And that's why I think it was so satisfying to see us come together here in Washington in a bipartisan fashion, find areas of compromise, find respectable offsets in the budget to pay for this infrastructure package so we can move forward and that we wouldn't just have another infrastructure week that died on the limb and nothing came of it. I think that was frustrating a lot of people. And it's kind of the basics of governance, too, is making sure that there are safe roads and highways and bridges for people to travel on. Major investment in this bill for public transit, too, understanding that not everyone can afford their own car for their transportation and work needs. But the quality water infrastructure needs too, I think can't be overstated. And we're going to be getting, what was it, like $142 million on quality water initiatives. I'm talking about the nitrates and phosphorus, groundwater contamination that's affecting too many areas of the state. If you don't have clean drinking water, it's going to be hard to sustain that community. I think we all realize that. This bill is going to go a long ways helping identify, clean that up. PFAS remediation, Chris Wright, on French Island, a major problem right now. We had seed money in the American Rescue Plan that passed earlier this year that went back to townships like French Island, the town of Campbell, to the city of La Crosse, the county of La Crosse. Ultimately, the state of Wisconsin got $2.4 billion in the American Rescue Plan. I made sure that that money under that plan could be used to deal with PFAS remediation, cleanup, and making sure we get out of this trouble. This infrastructure bill will double down on that right now and make sure that there are resources available. So when the local community comes together and establishes a workable plan, and we're working hard to do that right now, but there's going to be resources backing them up in order to accomplish it. And again, this is fundamental to people's lives. They got to be able to rely that the children are drinking safe water and they're not going to develop cancer in their lives. So we recognize that in this infrastructure bill and in the American Rescue Plan. And I'm encouraging our local governing bodies to look at these pools of money now as tools in order to fix this problem.
When you're talking about the PFAS issue out on essentially on French Island, you've got people who are really have been thrown for a loop here, and are we're looking at some major out-of-pocket remediation expenses. Do you think the funding that's available through this bill would be enough to like fix that, or does it just is it meant to just help them get down the road with it?
No, I think it's meant to fix. I mean, it's going to be a large pool of money now, and working with Governor Evers' administration and DNR Secretary Spencer Cole, who's taking the lead on this, to be able to work with our local communities that have PFAS problems and develop a plan where we can get buy-in and get some consensus. I know that it's hard for individuals to give up their private wells. They've already made that investment. They don't have to pay utility fees every month on that. But given the nature of PFAS, it's a forever chemical for a reason. Once it's in, you can't get it out. That we may have to be looking at different water systems to hook up to that could guarantee that. Now, there may be a way to kind of abate the additional expense in that household for it. You know, Culligan's done a great job being able to provide safe drinking water for everyone who needs it on the island, but Culligan's not a long-term solution for any of this, nor is private wells, I'm afraid, that are contaminated now with this PFAS chemical. You can't get it out of those systems. So we got to be looking at other means of remediating this and keeping people safe. I would also add, Ezra, this is important for property values, too. Unless we fix this, it's going to be hard for people to sell their property that have PFAS contaminated wells. No one's going to want to buy into that. So you can see property values plummet, property taxes taking a hit. This has a domino effect that can lead to very bad results if we don't get serious with this. So again, with the American Rescue Plan and that money being available to deal with PFAS, now the infrastructure bill, $145 million more coming to Wisconsin for quality water infrastructure. That's going to go a long ways, I feel, to helping solve the problem.
We're talking to Congressman Ron Kind on Newsmakers, and we're speaking about the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, which has recently been signed into law and has a lot of funding heading to Wisconsin. We're talking about that funding and what it's going to do in the 3rd District, particularly in our listening area in southwestern Wisconsin. The other water quality issue that that comes up in terms of drinking water is a lot of concerns over agricultural runoff and pollution related to these large-scale agricultural feeding operations. How is this spending going to address issues like that, Congressman?
Well, some of this quality water infrastructure funding is going through the Department of Agriculture, through the conservation title. And ever since I came to Washington to serve in Congress, Ezra, and I was a product of the Rolling Hills and the Coulees and the bluffs that we have throughout western Wisconsin, I've been one of the champions of making sure we have a strong conservation title in every farm bill. Some years I've been more successful than others, but these are voluntary and incentive-based land and water conservation programs meant to keep the topsoil on our farms rather than it slipping into the lakes and rivers and streams and contaminating it, making sure that the nitrates and phosphates don't flow off farmland and contaminating our drinking water supplies. And more needs to be done on that front. That's why I'm helping shape the next farm bill, even though I won't be in Congress to see its final passage. But There are more that we can be doing to empower local landowners, especially our farmers, to prevent that runoff that can contaminate drinking water supplies and reduce the conflict that exists in our communities from farming and rural residents.
We're talking to Congressman Ron Kind today about federal infrastructure funding that is headed to Wisconsin through the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. Of course, you're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you would like to pass a comment along to our show, we'd love to hear from you. Our email address is newsmakers@wpr.org, and our website is wpr.org/newsmakers, and that's where you can find all of our previous episodes and stream part of this conversation that you might have missed or hear any of our other shows. We're going to take a time out. We'll be right back in just a moment here on Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio.